You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
You are listening to the number one horse podcast in the world. Here's your entertaining look at the horse world and the people in it.
Well, good Wednesday morning, everybody. I'm Glenda Geek in Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Jamie Jennings in Norman, Oklahoma. You're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for Wednesday, March 4th, episode 3902. Oh my God, it's almost, that's crazy. Brought to you by Chewy Equine. Good morning, horse people.
Well, thanks for joining us on this Wednesday. Today, we're joined by Alex and Jill to talk about their new Horse Radio Network podcast, The 10-Minute Tack-Up. Plus, Krista Lafayette, CEO of Edelon Diagnostics, is here to discuss horse markings and colors, including spots and socks and stockings and things like that. I got an email from a listener asking about colors and things, and I thought, well, let's address that. And do we have any weird news?
Yes, it still happens. Okay. And we may or may not go to Florida.
Oh, I bet
today.
We will. I bet we will. And we'll get an update on how Jamie's horse made out at the vet. Hey, have you heard about the crying horse? It's everywhere. So what happened in China in this factory? They were making these stuffed horses for the Year of the Horse. They're plush toys. And it was a horse with a smiley face. Kind of cute, actually. A very, very, very chestnut horse, like bright red.
It's red.
And what happened was that they accidentally sewed the mouth on upside down to a pile of these horses. So the horse is making a sad face. It's a very cute sad face, I gotta say. But what happened was it became viral. And they sold out immediately. So they thought, well, let's just make some more. They now have 10 production lines to do the tens of thousands of daily orders they're getting for this crying horse stuffed animal.
To be fair, I saw this like a month ago and I want one so bad. So
they're
basically,
so
yeah,
cute.
It's like this, it's this red stuffy. And it's a horse that's supposed to be smiling. And it has like nostrils and a smiley face. It's just like a plush Disney looking horse, right? But the whole mouth is upside down. Even the nostrils are upside down, which makes it look even cuter. And so it's a smiley face. And this horse looks so freaked out. It's become like a cultural obsession in China.
Can we get him here yet? We'll have to look that up.
I don't know. I'm going to look that up right now while you're talking.
We were looking for a prize to give away for a trivia thing we're going to start doing shortly. This would be perfect.
Yeah.
For our show, this would be perfect. All right, let's do some daily whinnies. Well, we have.
Oh,
no...
yeah, I found them on eBay.
Oh, yeah. How much are they? $4,000 each?
$16.99.
That's all?
Well, they're probably 45 cents in China.
the non-smiling ones? The crying ones?
The Career of the Horse 2026 plush, crying horse. And there it is, the picture. And you can just buy it for $16.99.
All right. We'll have to do that. Get those for our office. That's perfect. So I don't have any auditor birthdays today, but we do have a brand new auditor named Kim. So welcome, Kim. If you haven't joined the auditor group yet on Facebook, just search for HRN Auditors and you can join there. And thank you. Thank you for becoming part of the auditor family.
I found it on Walmart for $5.99.
What?
I don't understand. The shipping is $4, so the shipping is basically the price of the animal, because I'm sure it's coming straight from China. Anyway, moving on. Sorry, you can Google it. So I wanted to give my daily whinny to Dr. Brackenhoff at Oak Ridge Equine. Very awesome surgeon. So we're lucky enough to have this clinic called Oak Ridge Equine, and they have, I think, 4 or 5 board certified surgeons at this clinic. It's so busy. It's like when you drive up to Haggard's in Kentucky and there's like 20 trailers. That's how this place always is. There's so much going on. We have quarter horses and race horse. It's really close to the track. So many sport horses in Oklahoma. So this is kind of the go-to place. And so, you know, with my 3-year-old, I wanted to obviously castrate him as soon as possible. However, you know, a lot of times vets will come out to your house and do it, but this place will do it in a surgical suite. And as big as he is and as
big as they were, the older they get, right? I mean,
and these were like cantaloupes, Glenn. I was like, how does he even walk around without them hurting? So I loaded him up and took him up to Oak Ridge. And, you know, when I got there, he's in the trailer and he sees all the horses everywhere and he's screaming. So the barn staff comes out and grabs him. And this Hispanic guy was like, oh my God, he's so beautiful. And I was like, yeah, yeah. Why is he here? I'm like, he's getting castrated. And all these Mexican guys were like, no, you can't castrate him. I was like, I just pat him on the shoulder. And I said, man, he makes a good stallion, but he's going to make a great gelding. And they're just like horrified that I would dare castrate a buckskin Andalusian that looks like, anyway, it was really funny. So culturally there's a difference in this type of horse, but anyway, I took him in and dropped him off on Tuesday or Monday. And I picked him up yesterday and they're gone. And bless his heart. So I said, you know, like he just hasn't had probably anything done. So I'm like, vaccinate him, check him for wolf teeth. They pulled out wolf teeth that were the size of my thumb. This poor guy has been ridden around in like a correction bit with giant wolf teeth. Oh, wow. Up in his gums. It's so awful. Of course, what they do at this hospital is they pull them and then they put them in a container for you to take home. So I've got bloody stumps of teeth that Chad's like, clearly you need to make. Well, he was like, I mean, obviously you need to make them into earrings because there's two of them. I was like, absolutely. That's what I'm going to do, my tooth earrings. So I brought him home and, you know, immediately. Now, granted, he's probably a little stoned and probably a little sore, but he's so sweet now. Here's the problem that you're supposed to, when they get castrated, you're supposed to work them for like 20 minutes twice a day to get them moving, to get any fluid that is pooling to leave. He doesn't want to move. And and the thing is, like, I mean, I took plastic on a stick and he's in the round pen and I'm shaking the plastic and he just looks at me like, meh. And then so I got like a long line and I'm trying to lunge him and he's like, meh. And you can't scare him into moving. I think he's just had so much done to him that he is just desensitized to where I'm going to have to resensitize him. You know, like instead of acceptance training, I'm going to have to unacceptance training him because he's just so over it. But again, he is vaccinated, wolf teeth pulled, balls are gone. Everything is so exciting. And he's so sweet too. So I'm really excited.
And everything went well. How old is he? Was he six?
My horse? Yeah. No, he'll be four this summer. Four. Okay. So he's only three. So,
okay. I couldn't remember how old he was.
But I'm so excited to have a normal horse again. It's so stressful having a stallion because they just scream and pace and just.
And I'm sure, you know, when the drugs wear off, you're going to still have a month or two of that till he.
Oh, no. He said for 6 weeks, they're still fertile. He said, we say 6 weeks, but it's more like three. So he still has gasoline in the tank, if you know what I mean. He was like, just don't get him around mares. And I was like, no problem, we don't have any mares. And then he goes for the gas to leave the tank, that's going to take about 6 weeks. He goes, but the behavior, he's like, it just depends on if he's bred before, if he's done this before, he's done that before. He was like, it, you'll see what you get at the end of 6 months. And I was like, okay, cool, so we'll see what happens. It's going to be great. He's going to be awesome. I don't think he's ever bred.
He'll be fine. Yeah. Everything. Are you going to keep him by himself for a little bit?
Oh yeah. He's in the covered round pen. It's like, I almost just had a stallion house built for this horse. So he's been out there and he's got hay nets and toys and all the things to make him happy. And I was so freaked out last night because he just wasn't really eating really good and he just didn't feel very good. So I gave him some butte and then I went up, we had dinner and I was like, I'm just a nervous wreck. You know, I thought it was going to be all better. And now I'm like, oh my God, he doesn't feel good. His balls hurt. Like everything hurts. So Chad and I walked down to the barn at like 11 p.m. Bless my husband's heart. And he was so much better. I was like, butte kicked in. He's good to go. So he was eating this morning and everything was good. So it's just like the worry of horse, like the stress as a mother. The stress never ends. It's exhausting.
You do talk about your horse's stress more than you do your parental stress for your son.
Oh my
son.
God, my kid's fine. He's at school. It's fine. Yeah. Hey, whatever.
You know, we both have lived in Kentucky in the past, and you know, we're in Lexington, and it's obviously known for its very large breeding farms and thoroughbred farms. Well, one of them just got sold. Shadwell Farm just sold for $50 million.
Oh.
Coolmore bought Shadwell. That's, of course, Ashford Stud. And you've been to Ashford Stud.
I went to last year to see American Pharoah and Justify.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, my God. It's like you drive in and it feels like you're driving into Dublin.
Well, now Ashford Stud is taking over the Shadwell farm.
Wow.
So they're going to have both farms. So they're going to have a huge presence in Lexington, Kentucky. Yeah, $50 million. It was one of the Shakes farms that he had passed away. One of the many Shakes I can't keep track of had passed away, and they're selling off all his assets. So that's why it ended up getting sold. But the good part of that is it's going to maintain being a horse farm and not be developed into a development.
Oh, so thank God.
It won't be 1,000 houses. So that's the good part of all of that. And that is starting to happen, obviously, around Lexington. It was starting to happen when you and I lived there. They were starting to rip up the horse farms and make them into housing. So the more of these that we can save, the better. And of course, it's happening all the time here in Ocala. It's becoming a big problem.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, so that's where American Pharoah and Justify are. And they just, maybe they'll have a bigger house now. We'll find out. All right, let's go to our first guest right after this word from Chewy. Chewy is everything you need to get your barn ready for spring. Whether you're battling mud, upgrading your grooming supplies, or stocking up on electrolytes and ulcer guard for that unpredictable weather, Chewy delivers them what you need right when you need it. Stay on track with vaccinations, dewormers, and daily supplements with trusted brands and the convenience of auto ship. Plus, enjoy free shipping on orders over $49. It's never been simpler to keep your horse happy and healthy. Start your spring restock today at chewy.com/equine. That's chewy.com/equine. For the fully stocked barn and for the life with horses, there's Chewy. Well, Jamie, there's a brand new show on the network. I think we talked about it a little bit last week. It's called The 10-Minute Tack Up. And we have Alex and Jill here. They're the hosts of the new podcast. Hey, ladies, good to talk to you. And thank you for being here.
Hello. Good morning.
Well, first of all, Alex, tell me a little bit about the show. What is it? And I know it's tied to one of our brands as well, right?
Yeah, it's called The 10-Minute Tack Up, and it is in conjunction with MyNewHorse.com, our brand for all things new horse ownership and just horse lovers in general. But Jillian and I are kind of the team behind My New Horse, and we've been wanting to launch a podcast for that brand for some time. And the format of this, it's as it promises, it's just around 10 minutes. Jillian and I get on. It's both the podcast and video recorded, and we just kind of riff for about 10 minutes on whatever topic we've decided to discuss. It's just a quick and fun podcast that we thought would match the My New Horse brand's friendly, engaging, conversational vibe that we've got going on the website. So yeah, we decided to pair up to co-host it because Jillian, coincidentally, it has just recently in the past year gotten her first horse after riding her whole life.
Yay. Congratulations.
Thank you.
So is the show about new horse ownership? Is it targeted toward that audience?
It's targeted toward that audience, but it kind of still offers plenty of like relatable moments for any horse owner. The topics that we pick are things that would appeal to that first time owner, though.
Okay. And Joe, you got to tell us about your new horse.
Yeah. So his show name is Dad's Private Jet. He is a 4-year-old appendix. So we will be doing the AQHA and the USEF over fences, thinking about teaching him how to do the driving and all that kind of stuff. But he's definitely a character. He has big emotions.
I love the name. We just love quarter horse names. By the way, Jamie's husband would like to have Dad's Private Jet, but she won't let him.
I mean, to be fair, like if I bought a horse with that name, Glenn, it would be like a green light to get a new horse.
You'd both be satisfied then. He'd have his new jet and you would have a horse. It's perfect.
That was so smart, Jillian. Oh, my God.
I know. I told my parents, I was like, Dad's private jet. My dad was like, uh-uh. And I was like, well, no, the name really got me and I kind of need him.
You need your own private jet. It's Dad's private jet. There it is. Love it.
And you know, we were talking about the cost of horses a lot in the show recently. So there you go. I mean, you got a horse that has a very expensive name right there. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It always, everyone's like, wait, is that actually a show name? I was like, I didn't pick it. He came with it and I'm never changing it. No.
Do you call him Jet for short?
I like sometimes joke around when he decides to get the zoomies. I'm like, all right, you're really showing your true colors here. I'm like, let's calm it down.
Just so you know, I had a horse named Jet as well, and he would pass gas when he jumped. Mm-hmm. And we called it his jet propulsion. So, you know,
I'm going to steal that.
Jill, you're down here near me too in Ocala, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm down here in Ocala, like 15 minutes or so from WEC. So it's really convenient because, like I said, being from New York, I used to have to drive over an hour to go to the barn each way. And now I'm like, oh, it's just a 15, 20 minute drive. I'm like, I'm so spoiled now. I love it.
You lived in the city, New York City? Grew up there?
Yeah, I live in New York City.
How did you get interested in horses living in the middle of the city?
Yeah, so growing up, I could literally see the zoo from my front door. So my parents would bring us there, and they had pony rides. And once I got my first pony ride, it was game over. I wanted to go every single day. My parents were like, we cannot keep doing this. And unfortunately for them, one of our neighbors was a horseback rider. So she was like, oh, I'll bring your daughter to the barn with me.
Oh.
And yeah, then it was just, they couldn't stop. And they were like, this was a bad idea.
Well, you could have told them, you know, I could have wanted a lion. You know, the horse is a better option than that. So
yeah.
You could have fell in love with giraffes. I mean.
Yeah.
Well,
I'm like, you're lucky.
It is an in utero disease, though, Glenn. Like, as far as liking it, it's yes, it was a zoo and there was one close to you and you could go and ride the horses, but it wouldn't have mattered. You still would have figured out a way to ride. Yeah. We all do.
So let's head out to the West Coast. Alex, you're out there, right?
Yeah, I moved from Lexington, Kentucky recently, horse country, out to the Wild West in Oregon. So it's a bit of a different change of scenery, change of pace.
Yeah. What was the biggest change? What changed for you heading? We both lived in Lexington before, so we kind of get it.
Well, for me, obviously, you're not in the heart of horse country anymore, but just being surrounded by, you know, mountains and wilderness instead of thoroughbred horse farms for me has been the biggest change.
Why the change? Why Oregon?
It had kind of always been a dream to live in the Pacific Northwest. And, you know, we're all lucky enough to work from home, work remotely. So we made it happen.
And what's the horse culture like in your immediate area?
So there is a pocket of sport horse. I ride English hunter jumpers. And so that's, you know, what I gravitate toward. So there is a pocket, a little horse community here that's very active and very passionate. I haven't got into competing yet. I'm taking a break from horse showing and being right in the thick of it, but
being broke and stressed out, what?
It's amazing. My stress levels have gone down. My bank account has gone up. It's
and you're in an area with amazing trail riding too.
Yes, I have not gotten on the trails yet, but I have friends that ride out to the coasts. They ride through the wineries. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I mean, that's a dream right there. It better than riding through a golf course is probably riding through a winery. I think that's pretty good.
Down especially here, if you can stop and have a drink and then keep riding.
Yeah, exactly.
You're my people.
Jennifer got to ride when we first moved to Florida. When we actually had orange groves in Florida, she got to ride with friends through an orange grove that was enormous. So they were just cantering up and down the rows between, and it was the oranges were almost ready at that point. So she said that was kind of magical. That was kind of cool.
That's cool.
Yeah. Well, we asked some of the listeners, what's the one thing you wish you knew when you bought your first horse? And I thought, well, that'd be appropriate for with you when you guys are coming on. And the first answer are, looks aren't everything. Some of the most difficult horses I've had were the pretty ones. Right, Jamie? Did you write that or was that?
I don't know what you're talking about, Glenn.
Jillian can attest to that.
Yeah. So is the new one a handful?
Yeah, he's a handful. He is handsome. He is actually kind of the opposite of what I was looking for when I sent my trainers my dream list. I was like, oh, I want a gray. I want him to be older. I want it to be a gelding. I got a baby that is black. But he is gorgeous, but he is just a handful in every way. He's like a big puppy dog, but he he just really knows how to keep my life interesting right now. And his jet fuel likes, like you said earlier, likes to kick in.
You know, it is. We always tell people don't fall in love when you first see the horse, but all of us do it. I mean, we've all
I fell in love off a photo and I was like, okay, this is definitely a disease because I'm like, I've never seen this horse in person and I'm in love.
Yeah, we would never pick a man this way. Never. Yeah, we're like, let's get a life partner that we're going to spend thousands and thousands of dollars on and let's just get it off the photo. It'll be fine. Everything will be fine.
Another answer was there's no such thing as too old. I had a family friend tell me that I needed to try out the older horses when I first started. So I found a 23-year-old that ended up being my everything. But I never, unless the friend had said to look at the 23-year-old, I would have never done it. Yet it was the perfect horse to teach me to ride. I think that's a mistake that we've talked about many times on the show is that younger riders end up wanting younger horses when they, in fact, could learn very well on a 23-year-old and then get the younger horse.
Glenn, they grow together. They grow together. It's important.
With many medical bills along the way. This is probably one of the biggest mistakes I think we see with new horse owners, right? Is getting the 2-year-old and we're going to grow together. And I'll train it even though I don't know anything about training a horse. It's definitely one that we saw when we had our boarding stable. And the ones that had the most trouble were the ones in this situation.
Yeah.
Yeah. And needed the most help. Here's another one. You never stop learning. And there's 100 ways to do the same thing, and 90 of them are correct. Reading is not enough. You must practice and find the right people who you can do perfect practice with. You know, I think it is great when somebody does find, when they're coming up, whether it's a teenager or an adult, when they find that barn family that they can be part of. I think actually boarding is better in that situation. And, you know, you guys talk about it, too, the boarding versus keeping them at home. What do you think, Alex? What have you found?
Well, I have primarily boarded all my horses over the years, and I will agree with that listener's comment that becomes my family, my social circle, my support group, especially as an adult. Like we were just discussing me moving to a new city. How am I going to make friends as an adult in my 30s? And it's that barn community that really lifts you up and supports you. So I will second that for sure.
Yeah, I think it can go both ways. And it's interesting because we just did a poll last week and the results with our listeners were 65% of them have their horses at home. And that number surprised me. It actually surprised me because I thought it would have been more the other way. But I totally agree. When you're first learning, having that barn family to help you out and hopefully somebody there that really knows what they're doing that you can watch and listen, you know, and then you kind of figure out what's right for yourself. And that was the next answer is have the right people to ask for help, but always listen to your common sense, intuition or whatever, if it doesn't feel right. And I think that goes without saying, right? And then, you know, we do have a lot of our listeners that have their first horses and listen to the show forever. And they do say, and the last comment was basically find all the resources you can and absorb it all. And then you're going to find where you fit. You know?
I like that.
Yeah, I think that's true too. And I think we all try and do that. We all try, especially horse people. They absorb everything and they watch everything. But I'm excited for the new show you guys have coming up. It's the 10-Minute Tack Up. It started already, right?
Yes, we just had our second episode.
And they can find it on horseradionetwork.com or any podcast player. I love the name, too. That's a great name. Good job there. And good luck with the show.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, guys. Well, in our health segment this time, I did have a health guest booked for the show today who had an emergency come up last night and had to
postpone. Those darn vets, they just keep taking calls from people and not coming on our show.
This is the second guest this week that actually had legitimate horse health emergencies come up. So we'll get that person back on if it's going to be their first appearance here. But in the meantime, I got an email 2 weeks ago from somebody asking about color. Have we talked about color on the show and horse color and spots and all that? And we did. Back like 5 years ago, we spoke to Krista Lafayette, who's one of our favorite guests from Edelon Diagnostics. And she's so well-spoken and talks about this so well. And we ended up talking to her about birdcatcher spots and socks and stockings and facial markings and manes and tails and all that kind of thing. So I thought I would just replay that and help the listener out because it was such a good interview. You weren't actually on that. It was Lisa that was on this one. So
I was going to say, I don't remember this, but now I'm excited to listen.
You know, it was a fascinating conversation. You know, Krista's fantastic. So we were glad to have her on to handle this one. And hopefully we answered the listener's question. Thank you. If you have questions that you would like us to tackle, just email me at glenn@horseradionetwork.com. Now that Ashley has taken over the running of the network, I get like no emails anymore. It's wonderful. So if you send me an email, I'm probably going to answer it and see it.
But do you need me to email you every day so you don't feel bad?
I'm kind of enjoying it, but now the emails I do get are from listeners and it's wonderful. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, it's not all the business crap. I don't get those anymore. So this is Krista and this was Lisa and I doing the interview back in 2020, I think.
So we are welcoming Krista Lafayette, the CEO of Edelon Diagnostics, and we're going to talk about birdcatcher spots and genetics and all kinds of coat color markings. Krista, welcome.
Thank you so much. I love this show, and I'm so excited every time we talk. It's so much fun.
Well, the last time you were on, I was not on, but I listened, and we were talking about coat colors and all that kind of fun stuff. And today, I think we're going to focus on just the markings and all those weird little spots and color things that we see.
That sounds great. As long as you guys can put up with my whatever creeping crow voice, over it. Let's talk about
Glenn.
It.
Yeah,
you and Glenn.
We're in this together, Krista. We're fine.
So
excellent.
I'm just fascinated by the genetics of coat color and markings and all of that. And so tell us just in general, you know, are leg and face markings, are they genetically predictable like coat colors? Like you breed two chestnuts together and you're going to get a chestnut. Are the leg markings kind of like that too?
So the absolute black and white solid answer is kind of.
Okay.
That's why we love Krista. She's so decisive,
yes.
You know?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Tell us about that. Tell us about kind of.
So white markings, white markings come from a huge number of variants and mutations in a couple of regions. We know that there's a handful of regions. We suspect that there are more. There are two major regions that we tend to look in. There's one called the KIT region, K-I-T, and there's one called the MITF. Some people call it MITF. And those are two regions that we'll use as examples. Each of these regions is a part of your genetic code that is the map to building you. Right?
Right, right.
So as your body is constructing itself, wow, that's really deep. As you're being built, your cells and your neurology and your musculature and everything starts to construct itself based on this map that is you, that's your genetic code. And if it comes to a region, let's say in the MITF region, if MITF codes for where your melanocytes, your color producing cells migrate, and if part of that code is altered or missing, those cells will stop there. They'll go, wait, where do we go? And depending on where they stop and where that code is broken will result in white markings.
Oh.
Now there's, you follow? So that,
I do, they're, yeah.
It's not as precise as one would think. And depending on where the variant is, the mutation, in what region and in what region of the region will determine the amount of white that you do or do not have. But is it absolutely consistent? No.
So this is why if you clone a horse, they can have different markings.
That's exactly right. There are all kinds of changes that we still don't understand that happen during development that cause changes in what we think is a predictable thing.
Wow, that's amazing. So I know in the auditor room, there were so many questions and comments about some of the different spots, like birdcatcher spots. Can you tell us what those are and how those kind of come about?
So birdcatcher spots are one of the great mysteries of life. They're so fun because birdcatcher spots, they're these little white markings about the size of a little smaller than a penny, maybe the size of a dime.
Yep.
They're called birdcatcher spots because they originated, I believe, from an Irish thoroughbred back in the early 1800s, and his name was Birdcatcher. Some people say they're called birdcatcher spots because it looks like your horse is standing under a tree full of birds. You know what I mean?
Yes.
But the cool thing about those, they move. Birdcatcher spots move. So that's a little bit even crazier still. Yes, they do. They appear and they reappear, and they don't necessarily do it in the same place.
So, and there's no rhyme or reason that we know of right now to cause that or why.
We don't know. At Edelon, we have a couple of places that we are pretty suspicious that look promising in the genome that we have found, but we need more samples of animals with birdcatcher spots and documentation. Let's see the pictures. Let's see the pictures. Let's see the DNA to be able to figure it out. And then once we have identified the variant, why do they move? I don't know.
Yeah. I don't, it's amazing, but I've seen them. I had a horse who had one of those and it was like, wow, that's just strange.
Just weird. Was it a thoroughbred?
A thoroughbred cross. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thoroughbred cross. That's so interesting. So we're more likely, I guess, than to see that in a horse with thoroughbred lineage than not. So,
tough to say. I mean, that's what they were named for, right? Yeah. With a thoroughbred stallion. But there's no other documentation that I know of that shows that it was in other horses, but it may well be. So we have seen many, many different traits in horses that are alleged to only be in certain breeds. Yeah. But when we do these larger studies unbiased, test everybody for everything, lo and behold, we find it's all over the place. Fragile foal was one of those. We found that it was in lots of different breeds.
But then you go back and say, okay, 10 generations back, a horse may have had a thoroughbred ancestor that you don't even really know of.
That's absolutely true. Or they both could have had a common ancestor way, way back.
Yes, exactly.
I have the important question, though. Why aren't they called bird poop spots? Because they look like bird poop. Why bird catcher?
Because the horse's name was bird catcher.
Oh.
The thoroughbred was bird catcher, but they do look like bird poop.
Yeah, they look like bird poop. And, bird poop moves, too. So
this is true.
It's appropriate.
Particularly when I turn the windshield wipers on my truck.
Exactly.
It moves. So we have a therapeutic riding center, Krista, and we have a Belgian quarter horse cross named Tessie that Jen has actually ridden, Glenn's wife. She has the most beautiful, beautiful mane. It's flaxen and it's red and it's dark brown and it's henna. And I would spend like $800 in the hair salon to get a mane with her collar. So how does that happen? I mean, Belgian quarter horse cross. And so I have to think that maybe her mother was a bay because she's got some darker stuff in there. And the Belgian has the flaxen. But how does all that happen?
It's just a combination of colors, right? So think about a horse that is, let's see, like a buckskin, right?
Yeah, right.
Buckskin, when you look at it, it's a gold horse with black legs and a nose and mane and tail, right?
Yeah.
Or there-ish. But what it really is we know that if you're a buckskin, you have to have, to begin with, a black base.
Right. Right?
So you have to have one or two copies of the black extension variant. And then on top of that, you have to have at least one copy of what we call dominant agouti, and that's what restricts the black pigment to the outer regions, the legs, the mane, the tail, the nose, the ear tips. And then to dilute that bay that you've created by adding the agouti on top of the black, you need to add a copy of cream. And lo and behold, you've diluted the bay into this beautiful golden color with the black spots remaining. So what you have is not a single color buckskin, but you have a copy of black with a copy of dominant agouti with a copy of cream. And that's what results in that look. And that's probably what you're seeing in your horse, the multicolored mane. There's probably a whole plethora of things going into that.
Oh, obviously. I mean, it's gorgeous. And it you look at it and you look at her out in the pasture and it looks sort of flaxen-y, but you get up there and it's like, holy cow, there's 10 different colors in here.
Well, maybe you should pull her sample, pull a mane or a tail sample and send it in. Let's take a look at it.
Yeah, we should do that. Yeah, that would be great. That would be awesome. And, you know, the other thing, too, that I just find so fascinating is the seasonal color changes in coat colors. So, you know, we also have a horse who's a Belgian Shire thoroughbred cross, and he is what I think is a silver dapple bay. He's not been genetically tested, but he's got that kind of liver colored body with the flaxen mane and tail that you see sometimes in Shetland ponies, except this horse weighs 1500 pounds. But in the in the summer, he gets his body color goes from liver to kind of a sand color. And it's not a bleaching thing. It's like that's his summer coat.
Do you think it's maybe the undercoat? Maybe he shed out the bigger, longer, heavier coat and it's the
probably
undercoat?
Probably.
Color?
Yeah, probably. But what causes that? So there's these different colors in the coats.
Well, I mean, there's a bunch of different factors that can happen. Obviously, there's the sun bleaching effect that you talked about, which in and of itself is kind of interesting. We know that there are black horses that bleach in the sun.
Yep.
And there are black horses that don't, period.
Yeah.
And they rarely cross. The only time you see a hardcore black horse bleaching, there's probably a health issue going on there, right?
Right.
So if you think about all of the different layers that go into, again, going back to our buckskin, and you think about, now let's add in things like length of coat and type of coat, you know, color and texture, and then warmth, you know, longer hair versus shorter hair, coarser hair versus finer hair. Probably, and I don't know this, probably if you go to smooth your hand over that hairy winter coat, I bet the undercoat is lighter what you're seeing. But
probably.
I could be wrong. These are things that, you know, we're trying to study and we want to look at. But in order to find these variants and explain all these different things, we need a plethora of samples and documentation with photos. That's why we work with the horse people, because you all notice these things. I know
right.
my horses better than anyone, as do you. And that's how we actually find these things. When we find colors, it almost always comes from an owner sending a horse going, this is weird. This is weird. What's going on here? It doesn't make sense. And then we'll look at it and go, you're right. It's weird. And then we go out and look for other horses that are that degree of weird and see if they all have the same type of mutations. And bang, there's your publication.
Yeah. And so, you know, the other thing that's I think interesting too is so I have a friend with a horse who's a registered thoroughbred, and he goes thoroughbred all the way back, as, you know, but he's also double registered as a pinto. And he has that, you know, some pinto markings. And so obviously something cropped out from generations past. How does that? I'm just fascinated
well,
by
so
it. I don't even know the question
the
to ask.
Book. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, it's okay. The stud book for thoroughbreds, depending on where he's from, is only a couple hundred years old, which is still old. And we know thoroughbreds come from way back. But if you're talking by pinto, if you mean Taviano, Taviano is a couple thousand years old.
Yeah. Yeah. And he is. Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
So it could come from way back. We're back to that idea of the thoroughbred and this other horse sharing a common ancestor way back when.
Okay. That's
so
really
it's possible that exists, right? It exists in thoroughbreds. It's just that people have bred it out. They've been, it's not their preference. And every now and then somebody is a freak and says, nope, I'm not going to go with the fashion trend. I'm going to keep doing this. And you end up with a horse that's
yeah.
not the fashion.
Not the fashion, not the style, but I tell you, this horse is gorgeous. So, you know, there you go. He's perfect just as he is. So,
oh, well, you're talking to somebody who regularly adopts, you know, unfashionable animals with white markings in all the wrong places.
Oh, I'm
and
sure.
The wrong size.
Sure.
And, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I can't thank you enough for all this amazing information. I need to take you to lunch someday. This is just so interesting to me. But how do if people have, you know, a horse with a weird color, how do they find you? How how can they get some more information?
So we have a website. It's etalondx.com, etalondx.com. And they can go onto the site and they can do a couple different things. They're welcome always to log in and choose a testing package to test their horses for. We don't have your one-off test as most traditional labs do. We have a huge package for like $119. And the reason we do it that way is so people get a picture of their horse, not like a piecemeal, not four blind men in a room with an elephant, but see the elephant, turn on the light, right? And what we do then is once we've run all of these tests at once and we've come back to the owner and say, hey, you've got a bay horse and it's average height and it's faster to 60. It's got two copies of Sprint. What do you think? And they'll go, well, I think you're missing something. And they show us like it's white. Oh, well, that's weird. And then we're back to that. Okay, let's go look at these regions and see what's going on in there. And that is how we find stuff. We work together with the horse people. Everybody who tests with us has the right and absolute should use the free consult that goes along with the service. And we talk to you about your test results and we review it with you and ask you lots and lots of questions. And it is just, it's just good fun.
Yeah.
Horse people are a unique breed, right? And they're ready. They really want to discover things. They're way ahead of the crowd.
when you talk about genetics, horse people are ahead of the game. They're ahead of the dog people, and they're even ahead of most farmers and yeah. Because they know. You can send them this crazy variant summary that shows this alphabet soup looking thing, and they can look at that and go, oh yeah, that's a blue-eyed bay.
Yeah, they know. They know.
All right. Well, thanks, Krista. I appreciate it.
Time to learn why some days you're embarrassed to be part of the human race in Jamie's Weird News.
Yes, it's that time of the week where y'all send me weird news from all over the world. And we're going to go global today, Glenn. Global weird news. And I would like to thank the people that did submit some weird news. Stephanie, Jolyn, Michelle, Laureen, Diana, Maya, Meta, Jenny, Shelley, and a different Stephanie. And I would also like to apologize, I think, to Maya and Meta, because sometimes I just discovered this week that tons of weird news has been going to my junk folder. And I went to junk because I was looking for something. I was like, oh my God, there's so many stories in here. So some of them y'all might have sent a while ago, but I didn't do them. So here we go. We're going to do some of those. Well, like our first one globally, Glenn, we are going to start in Japan.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't think we've been to Japan before.
I don't know, but weird stuff happens there. And it's actually really sweet. So you know what a sunfish is?
Yes. We used to catch them. Yes.
They're like giant, right?
Yes.
Well, most aquariums don't have them because they require an extra amount of care. They're all over the world. They're in every ocean, but not a whole lot of sunfish are in aquariums because they just have a lot of requirements. They have curious personalities.
They're really ugly, if I remember right. They're really ugly looking.
They're so ugly. They're cute, you know? Like, they're so weird looking. But there was a sunfish in an aquarium in Japan. And it wasn't feeling really good because the aquarium had to close at Christmas time for a couple months for renovations. And they started getting concerned about the sunfish's behavior. Like, it just wasn't thriving. And they were super concerned about it. Well, what they realized is every time somebody would walk by the tank wall, the window, the sunfish would swim up quickly. Like, there's people, there's people. And then they'd walk off and the sunfish would get depressed again. So what they did to, they call it the last resort to solve the sunfish's health issues. And they think it stems from loneliness. So they took 4 mannequins, cardboard cutouts of people, got them dressed, and have now put them up against the tank. And the sunfish is fine. He was lonely.
He needed emotional support people.
He needed emotional support people. So yeah, they said that he's now, said the fish felt better. The following day was seen waving its fins in the tank, they said on Twitter. And he was just sad because he didn't have any visitors. So don't tell me that animals don't have feelings, because clearly they do. And y'all stop eating them if they love people so much.
You don't want to eat a sunfish. They're known for having like 20 times more bones than other fish.
They are known in Japan as a delicacy.
Well, that's because it takes so long to clean them. All those bones.
Oh, no. Okay, well, now we're going to come back to the U.S. and go to Phillipsburg, Montana. Okay, a 25-year-old man was pulled over, and when the police officer saw him, he had an open container in his car. Now, I don't know where Phillipsburg, Montana is, but that's probably fairly common. Just, you know, got an open beer driving down the road. Well, he got a ticket. So he had to pay the ticket. So he drove several days later, went to the Granite County Courthouse to pay the fine that he had received for the open container. And he was sitting in the lobby waiting. And while he was waiting, Sheriff Rico Barkel, of course, his Montana sheriff is called Rico. Sheriff Rico observed that potentially this young man appeared to be intoxicated, but he didn't ask directly. He said, "Hey, man, you drive yourself here?" And the guy's like, "Yeah, just here to pay a ticket." And he's like, "Come on over here for a minute. You've been drinking." "Yeah, I had just 2 and smoked marijuana twice. Like, I'm fine." And so then the officer was like, "Let's do a breathalyzer test." Did a breathalyzer, confirmed that he was in this case, three times the legal limit. That's more than two drinks, people. And then they walked out to the car and he had an open container in the car.
Well, he hadn't taken it out from the last time.
Right. So he was then charged with aggravated DUI and got another ticket for an open container. The sheriff's office posted about the incident on its Facebook page. You know, I love sheriff posting. And they wrote the story of it and they wrote, "Stupidity is not an excuse." To Florida now.
You all need to start looking somewhere else for your news. You just do.
I don't look in Florida. It finds me. Where is Hialeah, Florida? Hialeah?
I don't know. I'll look that up.
I don't know. It doesn't really. It's probably close to Miami because NBC Miami is reporting this story about Dean Young. Oh my God. What is the first story was 25-year-old. Now this guy's 26. Well, he went to, I guess it was just a parking lot, and he saw a landscaping van. And so Dean Young, 26 years old, decided to break in to the landscaping van and steal all the tools and everything. So he breaks in, quietly opens the door, climbs in, and he's going to start collecting all the stuff. And he gets all the stuff he wants to get. And then he goes to get out and it won't open. He's locked inside the landscaping van that he was trying to steal from. Well, apparently he's claustrophobic or something and freaked out, started screaming and beating on the doors. Help me! I'm inside! I'm stuck inside the van! Somebody help! And the landscapers ran over and they're like, "What are you doing in our van?" And he's like, "I'm stuck inside the van." They were like, "I think we're going to leave in there for a few minutes." They called the police, did not free the guy from the van who's still inside freaking out. And then the police come, and then turns out there's like machetes inside the van that he was going to steal too, because they're landscapers in Florida. Mm. Why wouldn't they have machetes in the van? So they end up having to open the van and they've got like guns drawn on him and get him out of the van. Turns out he was actually out on bail from another case of burglary.
We've got a theme today with the crooks.
You're terrible. You're a terrible burglar.
Yeah, you need a new profession. Maybe McDonald's would be a better bet.
Get a job. Yeah.
By the way, Hialeah, we should have known that. Hialeah Park, it's a racetrack.
It's a track. Yeah, that's the only reason I'd heard of it. It doesn't mean I know where it is.
No, it's down, you're right, down toward Miami. That's exactly where it is. Yep, I thought, well, that had to be where the track was, right? I think Seabiscuit was known for being at Hialeah, if I remember.
Yeah,
right.
I think so. Look at you.
I've watched that movie several times.
Last story. Oh, Benjamin. Benjamin Feltz, 37, and he's from Nakusa, Wisconsin. So, backing up, Wisconsin Rapids paramedics loaded a patient into an ambulance. Okay, so there's an ambulance parked on the side of the road. I don't know why the patient was being put in the ambulance. Car accident, I don't know. But they load the patient in an ambulance, and as they're closing the doors, they get the door shut, and Benjamin Feltz decides that he's going to steal the ambulance and jumps in the driver's seat and takes off the ambulance with a person in the back who needs medical attention and races off driving. How dumb. Okay. So he actually leads the police on a 18-mile chase through central Wisconsin after stealing the ambulance. Woo!
I was going to say, I hope lights and sirens were gone because...
For 18 miles. It was like a huge police chase in Wisconsin. An ambulance with a patient in the back. This is kind of a big deal. So he's driving. They end up having to put one of those spike strips out, Like, boom. And it was on a dirt road. So he does a spike strip. Boom! Dingus popped. Dirt road. He actually pulls in front of a landfill. And the police are like, "Get out of the ambulance! This is the sheriff! Come out with your hands up!" And so what does he do? Benjamin Feltz opens the door and he jumps out, hands up in the air, completely naked.
Okay, I didn't see that coming. It's not in Wisconsin this time of year. That's kind of chilly.
He Yeah. Not great. Not great. Yes, completely naked. He had jumped in the ambulance, taken off, and you're going to be shocked, but he was intoxicated.
Oh, yeah. Big surprise.
No word on how the person
was. Yeah, I was going to say, how's the dude in the back?
I'm telling you, the ABC 7 Chicago that posted this, I have more questions than answers. So I'm going to have to do some research.
How could you ignore that part of the story?
All they did was talk about the naked guy driving. I'm like, I want to know how, first of all, what happened to get the guy in the ambulance? And then what happened? Why was he in the ambulance? And what happened after it? But with the naked guy, was he like standing up, like trying to like pull the car over, trying to get through the window, you know? Or was he like completely out and strapped down? Did he flip? I got questions. I have so many questions.
They always do the dumbest interviews on local news, right? Well, you know, did you see it? What'd you see? This is one interview they should have done, the guy in the back of the ambulance.
I know. More questions than answers.
He's the one we want to hear from.
Yep. I want to hear
from him. If he was having a heart attack, that was a bad time.
Oh, poor guy.
All right, that was it. All right, get your weird news in to weirdnews@horseradionetwork.com.
Oh, yeah, I forgot to say that.
Yeah, so send that to weirdnews@horseradionetwork.com. Jamie will promise to check the spam next time.
I will. I got mired in the spam. I forgot to tell everybody how to do it. Yeah, please, if you see something in the news and you're like, that's super weird, email it to me, weirdnews@horseradionetwork.com. Now, before we go, I have another side note to let everybody know. I think I've made a decision as far as a listener meetup at the Kentucky 3-day this year. So I've been doing a restaurant and it's like kind of a pain. So what I've decided to do, and this is really going to be awesome because horses, duh, New Vocations has its annual open barn and barbecue. And it's Thursday, April 23rd, and it's completely free. They have drinks, they have an open bar, they have a live music, they have bar food trucks, usually vendors, and also silent auctions. Hello. And then also you get to tour the barns of all the adoptable off-the-track thoroughbreds. It's like super fun.
Is this Friday night or...
It's on Thursday night, actually. So then you'll have, because a lot of people can't make it on Friday night. So I was like, let's back it up to Thursday. And if you're not here, then message me and we'll figure a time to meet up or whatever.
We did this once before when I was along.
We did. Yeah. We've done this before, but unfortunately, there's so much going on at New Vocations at the time. I couldn't find everybody. Like,
Are you going to carry one of those little tourist flags with our?
I think I'm going to get like a horse balloon or something, and have a horse balloon on a string.
That's a good idea, actually.
I know. So fine, I'll be
because that won't scare any of the horses at New Vocations.
I know, it'll be fine. You're right. Dang, I probably should have thought of that.
I think the flag might not help either.
Okay, well, if anybody has any ideas,
your cowboy hat. Wear your cowboy hat.
I'm not going to wear my cowboy hat. I'm not going to carry it all the way to Kentucky, poser. But yeah, so I'll figure out a way. If you guys have any ideas, I guess the balloon would, you know what? I'll put the balloon at like our table or something. I don't know. I'll figure it out. Any suggestions, welcome. But if you guys want to come, you can go to horseadoption.com and click under the events, and they do like a RSVP, just so I think they can get a head count if you want to come. And then send an email.
Soon, though, come. Because they do it limited, I think, to a certain number. So
I don't know. We'll see.
Don't wait. You know, do it right away.
Oh, I clicked on it and it says his website status is suspicious. So I'll have to figure. Good luck. You'll be fine.
All right. Tomorrow, well, Jennifer and Mary will be here, and then we'll do some really bad ads on Friday. Get your bad ads in to jennifer@horseradionetwork.com. And this Friday, we're giving away the prizes for the month as well. So we'll be doing that on Friday. Auditors, hang on. We're going to talk a little food and snacks in the post show. We were serious on Monday, a little less serious today. I'm kind of hungry too, so we'll see how this goes.
Spay, neuter, gelds.
We don't agree on movies. We'll see if we agree on snacks.
We do agree on gelding, though.